CliffCentral.com.
It's Shawn Mendes, Nothing Holding Me Back. Quick question for Sia.
Yeah.
Yesterday you weren't here, and a lot of people want to know. What do you think of Canadian Prime Minister Justin from Canada?
Guys.
Because we were all giving our opinion yesterday. My buddy said no. She thinks he's got flopsy hair and he's a bit of a douche.
I didn't say douche. I said he has a stupid hairstyle.
Yeah, well, that's what you meant. He's a douche.
I did not.
I can read you.
It came out like
we can read between the lines.
Oh, go see him.
Yeah. Let's just have a moment. So you guys, of course, saw the pictures of him when he was jogging, and there were like kids who were taking prom pictures.
Prom?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were like posing for their prom at like this public area.
Yeah.
And he happened to be jogging past, and he like stopped. He was a team player, took pictures with the kids. Oh, he's amazing in my books. I'm sorry. I'm like the worst person. This is why I think like, sometimes democracy isn't good, because I'm like, I get to make decisions. I just judge him by his deep blue eyes, and I'm good.
So he was jogging past these people that were their prom outfits.
Yeah, it was like a park situation.
He stopped and joined them?
Well, because these kids were taking prom pictures in this park, and he happened to just be on his regular jogging routine. Oh, wow. And so these kids just asked him to like take a few pictures with him, and of course they took selfies. Oh, yeah. He's so cool. Don't you guys think he's like...
I think it's kind of cool that the Prime Minister of your country stops while he's on a jog to join you for pictures.
Firstly, jogging without security.
Or just jog. Anything. Just jog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, can you imagine any fat president from any other country going for a jog? The only one, the other one who's reasonably fit is Vladimir Putin, who can't wait to show off what he's got. It's like riding a bear and that kind of thing.
As Mark Banks says, he's just at the beach shoveling uranium in buckets.
That's his workout for the day, man.
All right. Now, you had a very exciting weekend while we're catching up with Sia. He was at the Sama's, among other things. He also went to the Prime Stars event where they basically gave extra lessons at the cinemas. Did you see anybody important there?
It was a very awesome bunch. My call time there was 7:30. So
in the morning?
7:30 in the morning.
So what time did you leave Sun City?
Stupid o'clock. It was like 4 in the morning.
After a night of partying?
Exactly. Well, like, you got to win in Rome, right?
You must have felt terrible.
Properly so. So after the entire summer, there's, of course, then the after party, and, like, we slept for just over an hour, but then had to drive back to Johannesburg to come back to, like, a whole... like 300 young pupils, which is so awesome.
How much of the Samas did you pay attention to, and what happened there? Because we haven't heard an inside track on that.
Yeah, well, you know, the term paid attention to is very, very loaded in this context.
In other words, are you saying you did not pay attention?
So what a lot of people don't know is that the behind the scenes of it all, there's like a certain, you know, X time where you have to be there to collect your tickets, and they need to usher people in a certain way, and.
So there's a lot of procedure.
Oh my goodness, way too much. And it's a lot of people going into the Super Bowl. So after a while, I was just like, I'm kind of tired of this. I need to calm down and relax. Mind you, this is like 4 PM, and I started to get my drink on.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time we were sitting down for the show, I was having my own show at the seats, but already, so I was a bit on the drunk side, but it was such an awesome show. Somizi and Tumi Morake hosted.
Yes.
They were incredible, absolutely hilarious, and I have to give extra kudos to them, because they didn't just go by the script, but, you know, when we were off air, they were still entertaining the crowd. Somizi was dancing everywhere, absolutely hilarious. It was Questa's big night.
Mm-hmm.
He won like 6 awards. Nasty C, who's a young rapper, won the big Record of the Year award.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many antics. I feel like this year there was so much going on that we even missed some of it. You know, there was that girl who was half naked, didn't even spot her.
Skolpata.
I don't know what her deal is.
Skolpata.
What does that mean?
Tortoise.
Yeah, Tortoise.
Her name is Tortoise?
She's from Bloemfontein. That's her stage name. What does she do? I think she sings. I don't know what she does.
I don't know.
She first...
Balissa knows. She's nodding her head.
Okay, Balissa, there you go.
What do you know about Skolpata? Grab that microphone. What do you know about this, Balissa?
We last saw her at
was it the mom
the
Mama
Metro, the Metro Awards, yeah, where she wore that yellow dress and basically had her ass out on display.
Because she was wearing this dress without underwear, but the dress had slits cut so high up that if she even just turned the wrong way slightly, you would have seen. I mean, you would have seen. So this time around, she was a little bit more covered, but like her one butt cheek was sticking out.
Wow.
And I'm like, it's winter. You're going to get pneumonia in your left cheek. Like, stop that. Don't do that to yourself.
My ass is stuck.
And for some or other reason, she was crawling on the red carpet. But I don't know if that was because, you know, she was doing it for the cameras, or if somebody said, hey, why don't you just crawl for us on the red carpet?
Wow. See why I had to drink throughout the entire show?
But isn't that, that's what turtles do, isn't it?
Ah, you see, there's the connection.
It's called bad.
No, so bad.
All right, before we move on, David Kao is here. I'm very excited to speak to him. We'll tell you why he's here in a moment or two. But before we get to that, Mabali did say that she wanted to address the issue of Jeff Radebe and the girl who was sending the nudes.
Mm. Nudes for Jeff. That was a story that, or rather a scandal that broke out about a week ago now.
Yeah.
When the presidential photographer revealed that, you know, the minister in the presidency, Jeff Radebe, had asked her for nudes,
vagina pussy.
And according to at least Sunday World, there appears to have been flirtation with two more ANC heavyweight politicians.
Oh, yes?
Between this lady and her name is Siyasanga Mlambeni. It appears that she has exchanged suggestive SMSs with the former ANC treasurer Matthew Posa, as well as Eastern Cape Premier Phumulo Masualle.
She's definitely lining them up.
Well, yes, you know, the temptation, that would seem to be the case.
I mean, the temptation is to say, well, you know, she's a bit of a skibberish and she likes to make herself available to all these older men. That's the temptation. And I don't want to cast aspersions because that might not be true. Maybe these men made moves on her first. Who knows? But she certainly seems like she's not saying no and chasing them away immediately. She seems like she quite enjoys the idea of toying with these older, powerful men.
Yes, because, you know, if you find somebody that you can toy with, then toy along. There are also allegations that, who was it? I think it was Matthew Posa, who apparently played for her plane ticket to fly her to East London the one time.
Ooh.
So it would seem it's a case of, well, if I can get X out of these men, then I'm going to do it.
Pussy.
She, when the papers tried to reach out to her, she said, well, I have no knowledge of these SMSs, and she's denied having any relationship with the politicians that have been named so far. So it would seem, you know, it's a case of I'm going to get what I can out of people willing to give me certain things.
Oh, well, party people. Thanks to the powers that be at Instagram, I've just found Siyasanga's account, and she's actually an official state photographer.
Yes, she is.
So that's how she rolls in these circles.
She's definitely, you know, she's within some pretty powerful networks there. That's why I'm saying, you know, you've got to, I don't know, maybe it goes to your head, you've got access to these powerful people. You know, a lot of the time power is an aphrodisiac, and to be associated with powerful men is a turn on for these. You know, you've heard about Bill Clinton and the interns in the White House, and that's an old story, but it's still valid. There's this attraction to power and influence and sometimes money. I suppose it can get in the way. It can become very complicated. And then, of course, there's the other side of it, where you've got these men who are, they're at the top of their game, they're directing the operations of state, and then they meet some beautiful girl and they get completely distracted because men are dumb, and we start thinking, well, we must be attractive to her. Even if you're not, you start hitting on her, and it's just embarrassing.
Do you think this will leave a mark on, like, her career now, her credibility?
I think if there's all these men, it might not be them. It might be her. Maybe she's the common denominator between all these guys. And we do know that Jeff Radebe has, up to now, had a pretty much squeaky clean track record. He came out very openly and honestly, and he did something that no politician does. We spoke about this with Justice Malala last week or the week before. He said, I'm sorry. He said, my behavior has been unacceptable. I'd like to apologize to everybody, including my wife, and assure you that this is it's not something I approve of. It's not something I'm proud of. And that's what he said. So good for him for at least dealing with it.
Mm.
We haven't heard very much from her since then, have we? She's just denied it.
She's denied having any relationship with any of these men, and she says that she has no knowledge of the SMSs.
Someone says Skolopat is a professional nurse.
Okay. I didn't know that. I mean, all I know is that she's trying to make it in the entertainment industry. I didn't know that she's also a nurse.
Yeah,
I would suggest she's the name change.
She's from Mabali's hometown, Qwaqwa.
She's from Blom.
Ah, that's what they say.
I heard she's from Blom.
No.
Look, I will never be embarrassed to... I mean, Saudi Motsoneng is from Qwaqwa, guys. Me, I was the first one to say that.
What, you're not proud of him?
I'm not what?
You're not proud of Saudi Motsoneng? Come on, my buddy.
Halala, my free starter, halala.
Oh, halala.
Halala, Limpopo, halala.
Halala.
Halala, Gauteng, halala.
Halala.
Halala, KwaZulu-Natal, halala.
Halala.
Halala, Western Cape, halala.
Halala.
I think he leaves out the Northern Cape on purpose. It's very mean. He always goes straight for the Free State and leaves out the Northern Cape. All right, let's bring the great David Kao in here, please. I don't want to waste the man's time. Let's talk to him. Let's see what he's got on the agenda. And as I said, he's not here for his health today. He's actually an ambassador. I think you'll be interested in what he's been doing. This guy's always up to stuff. He's never quiet, but he certainly isn't. He certainly isn't by any means resting on his laurels. Milk for Change is now entering its second year of addressing undernourishment, running from 25 May until World Milk Day on the 1st of June 2017. Brand ambassador comedian David Kao is on board, promoting healthy, safe nutrition for our children with the goodness available in each convenient, safe, long-life milk carton, all powered by your SMS messages. David will tell us more about that in a short while. I'm always happy to see this guy.
Mm.
It's like a brother in arms. I think we both basically started our careers around the same time.
Really?
Yeah, we're that old.
Oh, that's not what
that's
I was
what
trying
you're saying.
To...
Okay. I know you. I've got you, Sia. I got you down here. Hey, Dave, how are you, bro?
How are you, mate?
How are you, my man?
Have a seat.
Yeah, take a seat. Let me talk to you. Everybody, it is the great, the one and only, David Kao.
Yay.
Nice to see you, dude. Well, you are. Don't pull that face at me.
Me?
Yeah, well. Listen, I've told you this before, but the similarities are just too much for me to bear. You have, in some way, like a parallel life with, in my mind, Dave Chappelle. Like, you guys are just, I think you're the same. You're both as talented as all hell. You're both leaders in your field, and then you decide how you're going to do your thing, and you basically have said no to stuff that a lot of people would have said yes to, and then you come back out of nowhere and you just dominate everybody else again, even though some of them think that they're better than you. You prove they're not. Did you watch his special?
It's after watching that special, every comedian in America is rethinking their careers.
Isn't it true?
Yeah.
Right? It was that much of a fundamental shift. And comedy, it always evolves. There's always something new happening.
So
you got to watch your back.
I met him in... I think 2004.
Yeah.
I went to Long Island. One of my friends, Greg Barnes, was opening for him.
Yes.
And he said to me, people keep saying there's a guy in South Africa who looks like me.
It's not
so,
even looks
so
to me. It's your careers that are parallel. But
so
yeah,
this was
okay.
2004. This was at the height of the first season of the Chappelle Show.
Right.
And it's also the same night I saw Charlie Murphy do his first ever stand-up comedy performance.
God rest his soul.
It was at a Dave Chappelle show.
Yeah, he died
so I saw
earlier
his
this
first
year.
Ever comedy
wow.
performance.
So do you think that it's right of me to draw parallels between
Look,
you two?
Definitely the parallels are very similar. He started when he was 14 years old. He started doing clubs in the States. And obviously the fame thing for him, he handled it a bit different. I always say I've never been famous or that famous. And I think that's why I'm still around, you know. I haven't done the fame the way people do it, and the way idols would give it to you. You
know? Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that you're probably, even to people who don't know that much about comedy, I think you're in the like Hall of Fame top three in South Africa forever, whether you like it or not. I mean, you don't have to do any more material and you'll hold your place. Don't you think so?
I really, that I do, yeah.
So I regard you very highly in comedy, and I think a lot of the other comics do, even if they're jealous.
Well, you know, I try to help as much as I can.
You do.
So I think I got along with a lot of comics.
Yeah.
And I think also to a point where I put my career at the back seat for a while.
Mm.
Especially doing like Blacks Only.
Well, I mean, Blacks Only was just a huge opportunity for a lot of new guys to make their names.
Yeah. So if you hadn't been on Blacks Only, no one knew you or knew you were a black comic or took you seriously for a long time.
Tell
it's
me
been
about
13 years now.
Just I there's so much I want to talk to you about because we haven't seen each other in a while. Tell me about Charlie Murphy. Because I was very sad when I heard he died. He was actually a very talented guy. If his brother wasn't Eddie Murphy, we would probably have known him as a standalone in a very, very big way, right?
So his first routine was entirely about, I'm no longer Eddie Murphy's brother, because he was then becoming famous from the Chappelle Show.
Right.
So he did a whole routine, and you know, he used to tell all the stories about all the famous people that used to come to their house because of his brother's fame. So that's where the Rick James jokes and set came from. And, you know, Rick James in his high heels walking on expensive couches in their house. And so it was quite a cool guy, you know. It was,
but despite,
I met him once again after that, after a couple of years in New York. But I was also so, I mean, 13 years ago, I was 6-7 years in the game. Blacks Only hadn't. So after watching Dave Chappelle, 5,000 people 7 p.m., 5,000 people 11 p.m.
Right.
In one night. That was June, July. I was on my way to Montreal, and Gagiso gave me a call because then the SABC had paid for us to do season 2 of the Pure Monati show. So I changed my whole route and came back home.
Those were in the days
but
the SABC
the same
paid.
Year we started. No, everybody knows those days.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for those days today or tomorrow because I've just done a show for SABC. So.
Yeah, you hope. I'm holding time for you to get paid as well, dude.
So yeah, it's.
And
it's,
you decided to do Blacks Only after that.
So we started Blacks. So for me, it was always wanting to do a show because I had all this material, but black people had never seen me, you know, or had nowhere to see me because there were no comedy clubs either. So we literally had to go and call a show. This is for black audiences to come and watch comedy or come and watch black comedians or come and watch comedians talk about things that they would understand or relate to. So the marketing, the first power, the YFM was the first media partner there.
Right.
Tickets were 60 Rand, Nelson Mandela Theater.
Mm-hmm.
But the same night, there was the king-size comedy show, 1,000 white people, same venue at like 7:30. 9 p.m., same venue, 1,000 black people.
Nice.
In the same country.
But you changed. From there on, I mean, there was an appetite suddenly.
Yeah.
In comedy among
the following year,
black communities,
had more than 4,000 people at the convention center.
Right. And do you see why you're just in a sort of league of your own when it comes to stuff? And
well, you know,
I know
that's
you're
why
not
when people obviously now people try and compare me to Trevor Noah. Some say my career is over because or since Trevor, but that's because I always say if I was ever to be compared to any comedian in South Africa, Kagiso Lediga will be the closest, purely because we started same time, same day, on the same lecture desk at UCT in 1998 when we started doing stand-up. And we did all the TV shows where all the black comics came from. We did the Bliss Patrolies. We did the without Kagiso Lediga, there's no LNN personally for me. Mm-hmm. There's no Blitz Patrolie. There's no Bantu Hour. You know, so. If people really wanted to now say, let's compare people. Because, I mean, I took Trevor from Kidibone Mlautsi's shows in Newtown. I think there were like 30 people in the audience when I first booked him for like song Leo for my show. I did these jokes first when he was opening for me. This was maybe now 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put him on a couple of Black Song Lees. And same story, you know, once you've been there, I've got like his first ever performance there, Eugene Causas. So once you go from there, then everybody kind of started having their own parts. But for a while, I had to carry a lot of the guys. You know, I've got cars that I've bought that were for other comics because they couldn't get to gigs. So I would get them a gig and then they couldn't get there. Then I would get them a car as well. So that's...
I should have met you earlier.
Yeah, that was a great deal. Man. I would have loved it.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, I was single. I wasn't married.
Hmm.
And financially, at the time, it was okay. I didn't mind. I didn't make money from any of them. Skumba is the first comedian I've ever made money from that I was helping out.
But you don't have beef with Trevor. I mean, because a lot of people
have beef.
They like to make it look like everybody's either best friends or they're fighting. There's no in-between for people, you know?
No, we don't have beef. I mean, I've seen him at the roast. We last spoke just after he got the Daily Show when Russell Peters was in Asia and he said Trevor has stolen some of his jokes and he's stolen some of mine. So now the media ripple was left with me, you know?
And you're like, oh, God, I don't want to deal with this shit now.
So that's the terrible thing. The sad thing is my name will always come up if anything of sort comes up with him. So when you... I mean, I saw my name in the Hollywood Reporter the other day, but it's about a story that goes about, you know, Trevor was accused of stealing material or whatever.
You know what you're the Charlie Murphy to his Eddie, I'm afraid. Of course, I'm kidding. But the interesting thing about the South African comedy scene is it has become, because when you started, and bring Kagiso into this too, when you guys started, it was not nearly as big as it is now. There were a handful of people who could make a
living. We all knew each other. Every comedian in this country had met or performed with one another or had each other's numbers.
Yeah.
So me and Kagiso started out in Cape Town, 98. And we used to be told about this black guy, Ronnie Mudimola, who was in Joburg working with Joe Parker. Metsapo Mokgali was also studying at UCT. So literally there was four black comics.
Mm.
And for like 4 years I did Comedy Blackout before Black Song League. There were four black comedians in the whole country. And then we did Black Song League. Kim Engelbrecht was on the first lineup. Chris J. Govender, Chris Forrest. The joke was always having one white comic on Black Song. So Chris Forrest came on, and I said no. And then he went, and we painted him. We gave him black makeup.
Now, you could never do that today, right? If you did that now, you'd have a bunch of people calling you all kinds of things.
Leon Schuster is still doing it, so I don't know how people would react to it. But the joke with Chris was, no, this, you can't get on this lineup. So he went back, I put another act, and then he came back with black makeup on, and then we let him on the show.
Dude, what's tell me about this whole thing you're involved with now with Milk. I mean, what is this? Because, you know, you're not the kind of guy who throws your name behind just anything.
So I don't know.
You're kind of picky about these things.
So Liesl is here. She's the marketing director.
Hey, Liesl. Say hi, Liesl.
For Tetra Pak. Here's the funny thing. So, I mean, obviously I'll get a call from my management, Roddy Quinn.
Yeah. Is he still managing you?
I think 13, 14 years now.
Yeah, you're a good combo.
And obviously we produced. So Roddy Quinn for me was basically the white guy who paid for blacks only. When the black guy wanted to do a black comedy show, he was that guy.
But it was a good bet.
Yeah.
You know, it worked out well for both of you. Yeah. So Roddy called you up and said these people from Tetra Pak.
There's a campaign for, it's called Make for Change, and it's about, it includes you going to Home Affairs. Well, this is what it includes. You know, there's social media, there's this, and there's a video that has to be shot of you going to Home Affairs, changing your name to David Cow, COW. I don't know which came first. You know? I don't know if I ran the gig.
Oh, that's a great, but my name was not, good, right?
if my name was not KAU. I don't know if I'd have the gig. I don't know. This is a lot of advice.
I don't know.
Is so that, was that the idea originally, to have him change his name to COW?
I think it was coincidental, and it was a perfect match. But I think you've alluded to this a couple of times. David is such a great ambassador. We've had such a fruitful journey with him thus far. And he really does allow us to tap into a consumer target market that previously we weren't able to tap into. So I think millennials are really important for us, and he affords us that opportunity. He's a great ambassador. Plus, his name is Carl.
All right, but when you heard this from Roddy, you must have started. You said to him already, look, get the hell out of here. I'm not going to do this. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You must have.
So obviously, I thought about it, and I thought, is it going to confuse people, and et cetera, et cetera. But then I also understood, actually, that might be what's needed to kind of get the attention around the Milk for Change campaign. So the whole thing is about, you know, you can make a difference as well, or donate some money. You don't have to go as far as changing your name just to bring some awareness to to making a difference. So
did you ever go to Home Affairs? Did you try and do this?
We got a video on YouTube. Yeah, we did some hidden camera stuff at Home Affairs. On Facebook, on the Tetra Pak page, on my page. I think we almost have over 200,000 views.
Yes,
since
that's
since
pretty
since
impressive.
Friday.
Wow.
Since Friday, yeah. So collectively, there's about over 200,000 views.
Now, let me understand.
I just hope people are donating at the end.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That's what you want. But Milk for Change, so this is actually about what? Kids who are undernourished. It's about kids who just don't get the right food, because there's so many kids who go to school in South Africa and they're hungry, or they're eating terrible stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because all they can afford. So where did you guys come up with this? Yeah.
So it's Tetra Pak, obviously.
You guys make all the
long life milk and juice.
Right.
Yeah, the packaging for long life milk and juice. So essentially, the vision at Tetra Pak is to make food safe and available everywhere. Obviously, long life milk helps us facilitate this. So we've understood that families around South Africa, due to factors beyond their control, don't have access to a nutrient-rich diet. We know that more than 2.5 million school-going kids go to school hungry every morning. You can't learn on an empty stomach. Nutrition is so important. So what Milk for Change does is exactly that. It provides kids with milk, which we take for granted, as part of a nutrient-rich diet for breakfast and lunch. We work together with an NGO, FeedSA, who essentially feeds 6,000 kids daily through their feeding scheme.
So and they would receive the milk on behalf of the kids, or to, because they already have the infrastructure.
Right, so they can deliver it and make sure everybody gets it and all the rest of it. But
now, for me, up until this campaign, I don't know why, but the concept of long life milk, I don't know if people are aware, it's the box. It's actually the technology that keeps it long life.
So it's not some chemical they put in the milk?
No. And I think this is why he's so fantastic as well. Because
right, but explain this to me. So I'm an idiot. Yeah. What is it? Do you have some kind of it's not just cardboard.
No. I thought it was.
Yeah, what is it made of? And what kind of a lining do you have on the inside?
If I could put this in the simplest possible way, it's essentially milk, as you would get, I say in inverted commas, fresh milk, because there is no such thing as fresh milk. It is fresh milk, in inverted commas, that has been heat treated. So what it does is it kills off all the bad bacteria, keeps the good in.
Is this good old pasteurization?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's just at a higher temperature, so it's ultra high temperature, so it kills off the bad bacteria, keeps in the good, and then you store it in a package which keeps out oxygen and light, which essentially allows bacteria to grow and locks in the flavor.
So in other words, it has to be really, really airtight. It has
to
be sealed off from the outside atmosphere. I mean,
There's six layers,
one of which is the alufoil, which allows us to get that
top
line.
Six layers?
Yes.
I had no idea this was so complicated. You buy the stuff, you think this is ridiculous, right?
Imagine. So
and the most important thing is there's no preservatives.
Yeah.
There are absolutely no preservatives. It's exactly the same milk.
Okay, let me open up about something first of all. I am really shitty about doing shopping. I'm a single guy. I live on my own at home. I put milk in my tea. That's pretty much the extent of milk use in my house. But I never have fresh milk. And when I do buy it, it sits in the fridge, and within the time I need it, it's already gone sour, and there's no use for it.
Yeah.
So I keep a pack of these
long life.
I'm not endorsing the product. I'm not your ambassador.
But this is what I
couldn't live without this stuff, because it's the only milk I have.
But that's the thing. There's still a couple of brands, but the packaging is the same.
So it doesn't matter which brand.
So you can't
brand.
Even endorse. Yeah.
Wow.
So Tetra Pak makes the pack. Hence, they could start or do the campaign about long, because then they still get everybody else or all their customers involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole idea. So, I mean, we started very early on in the 1950s pioneering this technology. But the whole point was is that we wanted to make food safe and available everywhere.
Right.
To feed kids, we needed a product that could go long distances to feed and give these those less fortunate than us the nutrition they needed. And Long Life Milk is such an amazing tool to do that.
Right.
And, you know, we're encouraging, together with David, we're encouraging consumers, corporates, schools to get involved. You know, it really does take a small action to make a big difference in someone's life. And all you have to do is SMS. 20 Rand will be donated on your behalf.
You just SMS Milk for Change to 40384.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. And then and we'll repeat that a little later on and let people write it down. But this is good.
But this is the other thing. So you kind of think about it. By not having a fridge, automatically you are not going to buy milk. Because that's the first thing that you goes into your head.
Right.
You know? Which would then go the same way there's parents who can't afford a fridge or to refrigerate anything or to keep anything cold, that would mean their kids as well are now never going to have any type of milk for that matter. But people are not aware that that's where the benefits of long life milk are, especially under those circumstances. Because by default, you're not going to buy anything that has to be refrigerated or to stay overnight, you know. So you grow up not having had certain type of food purely because there was no fridge or no.
Do you know, sometimes we get people in here and they're plugging something because they're a sponsor and an ambassador or whatever the case may be, and it just feels like they're doing it just for the money. And it sounds like you actually give a shit about milk.
So for me, I was blown away that I just turned 39 and I actually had no clue how long life milk works, which would then be the same for juices as well.
You taught me. Oh, wow. Mavs, did you know any of this shit?
No, I did not. I did not.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because the launch I started thinking maybe I shouldn't go out saying.
No, but I think you've given the message that we've been trying to do for so many years.
So tell us what's happening in your life at the moment. I mean, you're not just doing this. This is a fairly big project, but there's a lot going on. What else can you tell us?
Well, I've just wrapped a new TV show, It's Okay, We're Family, where I play myself, and I got Mark Banks to play my dad.
We had him here on Friday. He basically did not stop doing. He was doing material for an hour, unscripted. He didn't plan
That's
any
Mark
of it.
That's Mark Banks.
Yes, it's this guy.
So he was the second ever comedian I met 18 years ago after I met John Flesmas first.
Mm-hmm.
And the first corporate gig, my 21st birthday was waking up in Res at UCT. Going to our manager's office at the time, getting on a plane to from Cape Town to Bloom, guest house somewhere out of Bloom, waited for Mark Banks and John to arrive, rehearsed the corporate, and then performed that corporate the following morning. That was my 21st birthday. That's when I met Mark Banks. This was 18 years ago. So I've always had this thing of us doing something.
Well, who is it? Is it important? Yeah,
we can wait for you.
No. This one.
Who is that?
I'll take it later.
Who is it?
Pay some payment I'm waiting for.
Okay, that's good, because it's the end of the month and we need these things.
Payment must come.
Oh, yeah.
So I've always had this thing of Mark playing my dad, but for me it had always been a feature film in my head, you know. So Kamsela, who's a producer, came with this idea. So I've got a sister, Natasha Tahani, she's played by Natasha Tahani.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like the Kumars. But the idea is that I'm trying to make a movie. I'm trying to make the greatest South African movie ever. So I have all these people that come to my house that I interview for my YouTube channel or vlog type thing.
Uh-huh.
But my father and sister are always trying to be in the mix, you know. So I'd have in the house from Hakim Kaikazim, Akin Motoso, Kagiso Lediga, Joy Riyad, Mona Munyani, all these actresses. But somehow my dad, who obviously now the reason he's our dad is we're adopted, right? So there's things that come out throughout the 26.
It's not like Michael Jackson who had white children even though he was black.
So throughout the 26 apps, there's little things that come out that we kind of find out about our dad. We're wondering where we adopted because he needed some BEE story. But we don't quite know. And now he's just broke and they're now living in my house where I also shoot this TV show. But now the interesting thing is now everybody believes we are making this movie. So now I have to make this movie.
So you actually are going to go through with it.
Yeah, so I'm going to go through.
This is an unintended result.
I'm going to go through and make the movie, yeah.
You have a lot of friends in South African entertainment, though, because maybe just as a result of the fact that you've been around a while.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen a lot happen, and you know a lot of people.
19 but, I mean, years.
Yeah. We started at the same time. You started in comedy. I started in radio.
Yeah.
But it's
And
it's
we're
amazing.
Both ending up online.
isn't that the right move?
It is.
I kind of feel sorry for people who aren't moving there because they're still not in charge of their own lives, you know?
So I've got this other TV show, David Gow's House, on my YouTube channel. And when people say, why isn't it on TV? It's licensed to StarSat, which, it's a licensing. I own the show.
Can you find out for me, because you'll have contacts there. I had the StarSat guy come to my house. You know the story. Yeah. This guy came. He was trying to fix it up. He fixed the dish. Then he said to me, no, the box is faulty. So I took his word for he disappeared with my box. He's never come back. I used to have StarSat. I don't have it anymore. They took the fucking thing and now I'm lost. And I don't even know who to call.
So can you put in a good word?
So that's my house. I've got the other dish. Then I've got the StarSat dish. It's such an interesting story.
The other dish
is fetching from another satellite. The other one fetches from another.
And you could see some channels on there, man. And, I mean, you get like Fox News, which we don't get here.
There's been channels that went on DSTV for years.
Yeah. It's very, very cool, actually, to have the options.
Then I put in another aerial for iBest, which is my other story that is just... I'm too loyal.
Do you have terrible connections at home?
I'm too loyal. I know the owner, so I've kept... I have unkept Telkom, but I still keep my iBest because I know the owner. But honestly, I should call and be like, dude, there's not
finished.
Even signal for this thing in Midrand.
You have to put up a special aerial.
So one day, my wife came home and said, what is that? And I started thinking, if I put one more aerial on my house, it's going to take off.
Looks like a communications bureau for aliens.
Some radiation thing happening there.
So anyway, people would comment and be like, why is this not on TV? I'm like, it's there. You're watching
it on YouTube anyway. What's the problem?
It's on the net.
But you see, people think, there's this funny thing about television, is people think once you're on TV, you've really made it. It's like they think the best job in entertainment in South Africa, and the one that pays the best, is like doing travel stuff on top billing. Mm. They really do. They think that's a big move.
So I haven't been on TV for about 9 years now, seven.
And you don't miss it at all, right?
No, I mean, no.
I think
besides being a little bit more popular or famous, if there's such a thing, School Bart is going to be very famous. I saw you had her bum on your screen.
Someone sent us a picture of her bum at the Summers. Look at
that. I don't
know
if you know who School Bart is. You must
see
this picture.
This is very cute.
So this was at the Summers.
Yeah.
That person, no one knows who this person is. Now we know. Because at the metros, she pulled a similar stunt, right?
Mm-hmm. She crawled down the red carpet.
I think now she's supposed to be recording or she has a song. I don't know. But she's become one of the most famous people.
Yeah.
Because besides social media, you know, every TV show now has hair on there and red carpet stuff.
But this is what I wanted to ask you. You've watched the entertainment industry change over like 19 years. You've seen a lot of people come and go.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're still around and you can still do what you want and you can still put on great shows and you can get out there and you can do the stuff you're interested in, that's a bit of a privilege compared to some people. You see a lot of them still going around, please give me a job. I'll do anything for a little bit of money. You've got to feel like some of the time, those people who started with you, not all of them are as successful. It must be hard. How do you feel when you bump into these people?
So a lot of the guys had the, I don't want to say it's the easy way, but they all were given, so they got gigs, and they took the gigs, and then when the gigs ended, that was it for them. So for me, Comedy Blackout was a year or two after I started stand-up. mm-hmm. which I owned with my partner then for 4 years. Black Sony 13 years ago, which I owned 50-50 with Roddy. Pure Monati Show, which we created, myself and Kagiso, is the only thing in my life that I don't own. Because technically the SABC could still fire us and get Desmond Dube to do it if they wanted to.
they own the content.
Because they, once you sign on that line, they own the thing. So,
but that was some show, hey? Wow, that was a groundbreaking show.
That was amazing. Yeah.
So this was 13 to 10 years ago. There was season one, and then season two was about 13 years ago. So between Black Songly and David Carl's House on YouTube, and pretty much I don't do anything I don't own. So I don't do shows, I'm not producing. And I think that's why I'm still here, you know, because I gave everyone else gigs, but no one really gave me gigs. Very few people have ever said they could give me a gig or they've given me a gig. Besides the fact that also,
do you think
when you ask me how much do I charge, I don't have a price because I don't get booked, you know.
But do you think maybe that they didn't, that a lot of these guys didn't offer you gigs because they thought maybe you were above that, or that you were already, you didn't need to do it? Like, they thought you had so much money.
I mean, there were a lot of the other gigs, like TV stuff, but I turned it down, a lot of it. And then there's guys now that do make the call, you know, because one thing for sure, I don't take other people's gigs for money. Mm. You know, it doesn't make sense. If we have to make it about money, it's not going to make sense. So if I like the person or I like the work or the gig they're doing, you know, so Joe Parker, you know, first, any comedy clubs we ever started performing in was Joe Parker's.
Mm-hmm.
So if he calls about Parker's, whether it's R1,000 or R2,000 spot, whatever, and I, you know, I would go put it in my diary if I'm available. The Goliaths for that club. But the everything else has to make sense. So the sound, the quality, the venue. So now if I do take a gig, some gigs you almost can't say no, or people get excited about the idea of you or having you there, I almost charge you in case something goes wrong with the gig. That's really why I charge the money, because I'm not in control.
Yeah.
So, because some people would pay you so much and then don't want to spend extra R3,000 on sound.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's you that's up on stage and your career.
And they expect you to be the only reason that people come, and they do no marketing of their own. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I kind of have damage charges to some extent.
But this is experience talking.
Like, yeah.
You've obviously, you've had one or two of those shitty gigs where it was just a mess, right?
Pretty much. There's no gig that I haven't done. There was a point there was no hotel chain I hadn't stayed in, you know.
What's the worst place they ever put you up in? Because I stayed in some.
I've stayed in a backpacker staying in Neisner. I was trying to be nice to the organizer, the person who brought me there.
Backpacker's thing. Oh my God, I can't imagine.
Yes.
How terrible was this?
Yes.
Did you have to communal
showers? Communal showers.
No.
And, you imagine some stinking backpacker.
And then, you know, later that night, you go to a sold out show somewhere, and then you must go back to your backpacker.
Oh, that's horrible.
The Cannes, let me tell you a joke about the Cannes Film Festival stuff. So, I mean, you may know the DTI has all these different schemes where essentially if you have a business that you have goods that you're exporting, the DTI will support you. So that would include if you have a film, for instance.
Yeah.
So the DTI would carry some of the flights, accommodation cost for filmmakers to go to different film markets, not just the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
But then you now start dealing with the three code system of government, where there have to be three codes of everything.
Oh, Jesus. So you have to go.
So now when you go to Cannes, during the Cannes Film Festival, the worst hotel in town is one of the most expensive. So like a 3-star hotel where you walk in and you're like,
oh no. But it is because it's so full, right? You can't,
So believe it or not, some of the worst accommodation I've stayed in has been during the Cannes Film Festival.
Where did you eventually have to go? Because I imagine that you'd have to stay like baby Jesus in a stable.
And so you stay there, but you know, for me it's always been that I really tried hard to participate.
Uh-huh.
And do like a group thing.
But
then, you know, I'll sometimes I just get to a point where I'm just like, you know what, it's fine. I'll just I'll be over there.
Yeah, because you can't stay with everybody all the time.
No, I try and be nice and be a team player.
Are you saying that you would wake up in some shithole and then you'd put on your fancy clothes and go to the film festival?
I would wake up in that shithole and then a friend of mine, very good friend of mine, Rob Hessoff, also one of my mentors, would introduce me to the billionaire that's sponsoring the AMFA after party. And then me and Kahiso would get in a Bentley and an S500 and go to the AMFA party and groove with Chris Tucker and Cuba Gooding Jr.
And then afterwards go back to this terrible
place. Go back to the manger. To the manger.
With animals all around you. Smell of...
You do it again, the following day.
Because everybody thinks it's so glamorous.
Yeah, so you'll stay in this dump and then after 10 days...
Yeah.
This was even before people, you know, when people were so excited about Uber in South Africa. I was like, I was spending 12 grand on Uber 3 years ago or 3 years before this in France, you know, because you'd have a meeting at Hotel du Cap.
Right, which is where all
it's
these...
It's like 800 A-list. Bucks to Uber there one way.
Oh.
You know, go back for another lunch, go back. But you must go back to the to the accommodation
with Luigi, some so greasy.
I might as well have booked
something.
My own accommodation. You know what I mean? So, but now that's the one thing, you know, how I driving,
because
I spend a lot of time in cars.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either you book me a car one if there's some rentals involved, mm-hmm. or I'm gonna take my own car.
Mm-hmm.
And accommodation, same story. If you can't put me up there, just whatever you are going to pay, it's fine. I'll sort myself out. Yeah. So for me, accommodation, especially, and accommodation even so if I'm traveling with my wife. I think my wife has had an American visa, I don't know how many years, but my mistake, I don't know if this was a mistake. So after we got married about 9 years ago, I have this tender friend, this friend who were tendering then, you know. So I was going to Nelson Mandela birthday in London. Roddy Quinn was doing it.
He did the 4664.
The 4664 in London. And this friend of mine goes, Chief, okay, so why don't we just do Europe? Huh?
And this guy's got lots of money.
He's got lots of money. And he says to me, so how much are you going to spend? 60, 80? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, 80? He says, sure, put it in my account. I give him 80 grand.
Yeah?
He says, okay, sharp, so we'll do Paris, we'll do Italy, we'll do Rome, then we'll end up in London. This guy takes 66 grand, books first class tickets on Emirates to go.
That's all your budget, gone, so on now, just the flight.
He spends 66,000 rand. On first class, and we go to Milan, we go to Venice, we go to Paris, we go to a Grand Prix somewhere 2 hours from Paris, you know, Dubai, end up at the...
It sounds amazing.
But now, this would mean, I think the first time my wife and I went overseas, we flying first class. Jeez. So now,
expectations.
If I say to her,
oh, the bar has been raised.
Yeah, no.
It's like, are we going first
to
class?
LA. I'm going to LA next in about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing my wife, because I'll be like, I'm going, I mean, Russell Peters is a very good friend of mine, so I'm going to stay with Russell. And he's always like, bring your wife. So definitely, if I'm flying economy, without a doubt, he would change my flight, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't want him to do. So I'll do my little premium or check my miles or whatever.
Right.
But anywhere where I'm like, economy this, my wife is like, where are we going? Are we flying? No, don't
worry,
it's fine.
She won't take economy.
It's fine. Well, it's not that she won't. I mean, we took it to the Grand Prix last year. But it depends where we are going and I guess why we are going there. So if it's a... if we kind of have... But she wouldn't... There's a group of friends going to New York and she won't go anywhere without me.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if she has a knee problem at some stage...
Okay, so she needs the extra leg room
and all
that stuff.
So she's just like, hey man, because
you know some poor people.
There.
Some poor people have knee problems as well.
You hear them bitching about economy.
It just means you.
They just don't have David Carr for a husband.
Yeah. I have to work a little bit harder.
Wow, Russell Peters, huh? What do you guys get up to over there?
It's crazy.
Does he take you out on the town? You must have met some amazing people.
Yeah, I have. So this was my Toronto Film Festival about 2 years ago. I landed there. I met A.B. Musa, who owns the Indian cinemas in South Africa.
Yes, we had him on here once.
Yeah. He takes me to a Maricom movie premiere, which was Priyanka Chopra's film where she plays a boxer, based on a true story. Right. So my first night, we go red carpet to a Priyanka movie.
Wow.
The next day, I meet Russell Peters' brother. He asked me to meet him at the Trump Hotel. Sitting in the lobby, Chris Rock walks in to check in. I freak out. I sit down because, you know, I met him years ago. But I don't do anything because I've learned now, you know, famous people, and if they know you or they don't know. So I just sit and kind of nod. He does like a sharp, sharp thing, goes up to his room. Russell's brother arrives. He's there to meet Chris's publicist. So when we go in the lift, Chris comes out. I'm like, hey, how's it, Chris? Blah, blah, blah. I've met you before and whatnot. Remember, whatever. Sharp. Finish the meeting, go to Russell's house in Toronto. I get there. Russell is going to the top five premiere. So we leave Russell's house. We sit down. We turn around. Chris Rock is sitting behind us. So Russell goes, yo, this is David, one of the funniest comics in South Africa. That's how I watch the top five.
Man.
But it's almost like that every day for him.
But you must, it must kill you.
Like you bump into Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Going out. And who's the beautiful lady in top five? She's also in all the Netflix Marvel stuff. Plays a nurse.
Scarlett Jones.
Is it Scarlett?
No. Black woman. The one in top five. That's Chris's crush or whatever.
But Chris Rock.
So anyway.
I mean, this is a guy. It must have killed you in the lobby of the hotel.
Gabrielle
Union.
No, not Gabrielle.
Rosario Dawson. That's the one.
Yeah. So you like,
eventually,
you know,
by process of elimination.
Walking out.
Get there. But I mean, you see Chris Rock sitting. Now, you guys could have. I would imagine there would be nothing cooler for both of you than to just sit and talk about comedy. Because you both got such experience. You both, like, walked interesting paths. He's got stuff that you might find really interesting.
Yeah.
You've got stuff he might find really interesting. But it's weird how society and convention, and you say, like, famous people, and you've had a lot of them in your life, so you're not, it's not like you're looking to have a picture with him.
Yeah.
It's the conversation that you could have, but you've got to do the right thing and hold back,
you know,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give
because you
space,
never know.
Let
look,
someone
look at what happens.
Introduce us and et cetera, et cetera. So
who do you really want to sit down and have a conversation with? Who would you really love to meet? I mean, who do you think, in not in necessarily in comedy, but in entertainment, in the world, who would you love to sit and talk to?
I've had Chris Rock, probably, purely because besides the Eddie Murphy tape that went around in the town. So the first stand-up comic show I was in was the first stand-up comedy show that I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started watching Chris Rock stuff and Chris Rock tapes, etc. So for me, it's always been that comedian that I knew and wanted to meet. And then I met 15, 16 years ago, I met Russell Peters then, you know, at the Cape Town Comedy Festival, Jimmy Carr, Gina Yashere. So I've had the pleasure of having known them for so long. But I guess for me, Chris Rock has always, for me, I always said, Chris Rock, Jay-Z, Michael Jackson, Nelson Mandela were those people that I kind of said, I want to meet these people.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a show for Nelson Mandela. We kind of met him. It was like a drive-by meeting.
Very good.
You go to the foundation, because we already did a 4664 comedy show. And then Zelda took us to we went to the foundation. And there were about seven of us. And Jermaine Jackson just showed up that day.
Greasy.
Jermaine Jackson showed up that day. But
did
you
set him, what do you want here?
Jericho. The old Jericho hairline.
I've walked into a Cuddy's in Cape Town waterfront, and Michael Jackson, so we were walking out, Michael Jackson walked in, and then they closed the doors.
Oh man, you could have just stuck around.
I want to buy some sweeties.
So now We go, we're meeting Tata. And that was just like a back door where he comes in into his office and all that, and we're waiting in the lobby. And then when we go in, it's like, okay, you guys are going to go take a picture, move out, four comics, the next three, take a picture, move out. And then Zelda is there. Like, Tata! Yeah. They're here to meet you! Oh. Tata! Yes! They're here to meet you! Okay! And then it's like, click, click, click! Out! Go out! Next three! It was like a drive-by meeting.
Yeah, now I get it.
But I've met the family, you know. Met Mama Winnie a lot and Zinzi. And so Chris Rock, I guess, would be the person that... to so have that.
Hang on, Michael Jackson, Nelson Mandela, Chris Rock is still the one that you need to have the conversation with.
Maybe
Jay-Z. Jay-Z, all of these people are at the top of their game.
Yeah.
Right? All of these people, whether they're alive or dead, reached the pinnacle of success.
The difference was the countries we were born in at those times. Because essentially we are really on the same level. In terms
I totally agree with you.
Parallel journeys, like we were talking about. Dave Chappelle.
Well, you know what? I mean, this is probably because we come full circle. This is probably the best time to kind of wrap it up because we've got to get out of here anyway. But I've got to say to you, man, what you have done in comedy in this country, what you have done in entertainment in this country, people owe you big time. Nah. It's not just those comics you bought cars for. It's the people of this country who you've taught to laugh at themselves.
They might just come Black Songly this Saturday, Empress Palace, tickets at
there we go.
Tickets.
Give it a goddamn plug.
And, yeah, man, got some Skumbas on the lineup. Tabangi, Alan Committees, Token
White. Yeah, well, you got to have one.
Yeah, you got to have one. The people who own the venue, the compu ticket, the sound systems, they kind of have that minimum requirement in the contract. So tickets are at compu ticket, Saturday, 8 p.m., Empress Palace. And please, SMS Milk for Change.
To 40384.
It's 20 Rand donation that you're making. If 200,000 people who've seen the video kind of drop 20 Rand, it's not bad.
That'll be a lot of money.
It's not bad. By the launch last Thursday, there was already 46,000 liters that were donated. And last year was 60,000. So we're trying to 120,000 this year.
So how many more days can we still SMS? Are we working towards World Milk Day on the 1st?
Yep, so that's the idea. For us, the ambition is that every year we celebrate World Milk Day on the 1st of June, and that it's not only a celebration about milk, but it's about giving back to those less fortunate. Like David was saying, you know, although we at our launch event last week, we raised 46,000 litres, in Africa, and I think specifically South Africa, there's such a sense of community. The way schools and the way corporates get involved, we really want to encourage people to, you know, donate or an SMS Milk for Change to 40384. It really does take a small action to make a really big difference. Let's look after our people and our communities.
And particularly, I don't want to make it a race thing. But I want black people to donate because this is for underprivileged kids. This is for black kids, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think we're giving some white kids long life milk.
No, so get on with it. Help help your own. Help your family.
You should see the pictures. You know, you've got the two ladies from Feed SA that are doing the work, Romy and Jane. So it's, you know, people would complain, why are white people doing this? Mm. Or we don't need them to do this for us. But then they're not. And it's not even about having so much money. You know, charity for me has always been about whatever you can do. Tipping a car guard or a petrol attendant makes a huge difference in their lives. You know, it's not about being a millionaire and then starting a foundation.
It's easier for a millionaire
small,
to give money
things,
away.
You know, you're take actually, your nanny's you, child to university or to
you're
to
doing
work
more or, if you don't have anything and you help.
Yeah. And it will come back. I believe it will come back.
Absolutely. Well, and listen, I think... again, you've done so much. You've
Thank
changed.
You. Thanks,
you've
man.
Changed the world.
So have you. You know, but maybe one day I'll sit on the other side and I'll interview you.
We'll do that. I'll come and work with you. I'll do. You're one of the few people I'll say straight up we'll do something.
All right.
Anytime, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right, there he is, ladies and gentlemen, David Gao. And
you said it properly. Wow, you're one of the first people that have said it.
He's an institution. He should be institutionalized.
Wow. At David Gao 1 on Twitter, David Gao on Instagram, David Kahn on Facebook.
Very good. And keep up with the godfather of what's going on.
Thanks, mate.
You are. All right, here's what you need to know. ANC apologists are fighting back against all the heat on Jacob Zuma right now. The staunchest of them are questioning why the DA have not taken action against Helen Zille after colonial remarks, which just goes to prove in South Africa, sticks and stones will break your bones and ruin your homes, but words will forever be a lot more harmful. Staying with South African politics, Jimmy Manyi says that talking to the Guptas is not a crime. He said, seeking their guidance and influence is also not a crime, nor is receiving gifts from them or visiting the compound for briefings or official events. Not doing what the Guptas tell you to do, though, Manyi says, that's definitely a crime. Finally, Tiger Woods continues to deny any alcohol was involved when he was arrested in Florida by police. He says he had an unexpected reaction to some medication that he took. He declined to mention what the medication was, but the waitress serving it to him at 2 a.m. was very hot. So that's all we know at this point. All right, have a good day. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Thank you to our guest, David Gao. Thank you to
Liesel
from Tetra Pak. Thank you to Mabale, Sia, Ben, and Lucas, as well as our intern and our intern's intern.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? We're the only place that has an intern for our intern.
That's, I don't know if you know this, but... I know domestic workers that have domestic workers.
Really?
Yeah.
There we go. You see this
is why you got an intern who's got an intern.
Amanda's intern, Emma, who spent the morning with us this morning. There we go. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.